Hey everyone, quick note to start the episode. I want to apologize. There was something wonky going on my end with the audio during this interview with Pam Didner, but she is fantastic, and I did have the idea to mute myself while she was talking, so it does get better. So I'm sorry about the beginning where it's kind of rough audio-wise. Pam deserves better than that, but it's a really great episode, so please bear with it and enjoy. Hey friends, welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring how to get buy-in for content marketing at a traditional marketing organization. So basically, if you're at a company that doesn't understand the value of content marketing or even know what it is, our awesome guest today, the B2B marketing consultant, author, and speaker, Pam Didner, is going to give you some tips on how to make the case for content. Welcome to the show, Pam.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me, Amanda.
Oh, of course. I'm so excited to chat with you. Before the show, we were talking about how I've seen you speak, and I'm so impressed. You always have amazing tips and so much energy, and I just loved it. So really excited to have you on the show. Before we jump into anything, can you talk a little bit about your experience working with these types of traditional marketing companies?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I work in a very traditional company and called Intel.
There you go.
And we started the blogging and I would say practice, I would at least 10 years ago. And when we started, the management was very skeptical as well. And we started as a pilot. And we positioned as, you know what, this is something we should try. Can we just do a quick pilot? So that's another thing that you can get yourself in and having conversation with your management is anything kind of new that management is not very familiar with. And the best thing that you can do is, hey, can we do a little pilot? Can we try it out? And that's how we got started, is actually do the pilot. The biggest challenge at the time is because Intel is a tech company anyway. A lot of the products that we do or a lot of products we sell in the platforms included tend to be a whole lot more complicated. So the marketers can write the content because it can be technology that's quite sophisticated. And with that being said, you have to work very closely with subject matter experts. And subject matter experts will provide the content and, you know, verbally or through, or they wrote the first draft and then we take it from there. So that's how we got started in terms of blog. And then, of course, everything else in terms of a different kind of content format that gradually and slowly follow after the content started becomes a standard practice.
I did see on your blog that you mentioned how important the language is around pitching it, that that word pilot is key so that people don't feel as anxious about signing on to something. Like, oh, it's just a pilot. Like, if it doesn't work.
No, it's kind of like, let's ease in. If it's not successful, we can call it quits. but the one thing I do actually want to share with your listeners, the length of pilot, right? So for any kind of marketing effort, especially on the B2B side, and if you want to test anything, I strongly recommend that you do 6 months, 6 to 8 months, right? And the blog is not something that, oh my God, you publish one, everybody was like, oh, this is the best thing ever, right? So it's not like you publish and people will come. There's obviously intentional effort you have to do to promote it. And that also takes a lot of time, as you know, Amanda. And so in general, I will recommend and then share with my clients or any prospects, if you want to do a pilot, make sure that you allow about 6 to 8 months and you have to clearly set expectation with your management.
Yeah, that makes total sense. What obstacles have you seen, either yourself or other marketers have to face when they're dealing with people who don't really know what content is? So I'm sure there's just the hesitation of, what is this? We don't know what this is, so we don't want to try it. But what other kind of setbacks do you think there typically are?
Okay, so let me answer that question in a long way, or in the, from a couple approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, content marketing or even content is nothing new, right? So even as a traditional marketer, way back then, they still create content. It's just a sales collateral or the marketing communication that they have to use to as a part of their marketing channels that they have to push out content, print ad, or even sponsor articles or even sales collaterals. All those mm-hmm. are some sort of content per se. But the thing about content marketing versus all the content that's being produced in the traditional type of a format is the content marketing is you actually have to publish something on a consistent manner. If you do blog, chances are you do blog every week, every 2 weeks, or you publish like in more frequently than you just have like, I'm going to have a sales collateral. Oh, I'm actually going to have a solution brief. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. the way I see content marketing, I always try to explain to a management, is nothing new. But that's look at the content marketing from the perspective that we continuously share the relevant content with our audience. So it's not like, I don't say, we have to publish a blog once a week. But that's say a little bit differently. Like, hey, to get our name out there, people are constantly searching. Because they are constantly searching, I think we should publish our content a little more often. And the way that we are going to do it is not creating more collaterals. It's thinking about what we can do to actually increase our probability of search. You know, so our content will serve up when they need it. So that's how I usually position. And it tends to work pretty well because I'm talking from the audience perspective, first of all. And second thing is I talk from the trend that people are searching a lot and we want to actually have our website, our products that serve up a little bit more often. But of course, I simplified my answer. But I simplify from management's perspective, right? Deep down, if you want to make sure when the search, whatever people search, that your article or your website come up, there's so much more you have to get into it. You have to make sure you optimize your website. You make sure you're on top of the keyword. You make sure you have tons of content that's high quality. You need to make sure you have a backlink and whatnot. But all that information doesn't have to share with your management. But you explain in a very plain English and then make them understand. And at the same time, that ease them up and say, this is nothing new. We just have to do a little bit more often. So, it's like talking to children. You know, broccoli is good for you. Let me tell you a little bit. And you dip that into a ranch dressing. You know, that kind of talk. Is that kind of sad?
That's amazing. I also read that you've suggested using the sales team,
yeah,
as a way in to show that content can provide value. Can you talk a little bit about that approach?
Yes, I publish a blog post and I talk about, hey, how you can pitch to management, right, in terms of content marketing. On one hand, you just the ideas I just share with you, as a suggestion,
mm-hmm.
work from the marketing angle. So that's one. And the other angle you can work with is from sales side. That's assuming you work on the marketing angle and the sales people are very, your management are pretty savvy. You say, I'm not sure I want to do that. And then you say, okay, what about this? What about you go to your sales team and the VP of sales and you align with them, right? So you basically said, I am going to do this. And the benefit of that, the sales team will actually have more content. A lot of time the salespeople come to me, majority of time, yeah, like they come to me for two reasons. First one is, we don't have content for that. And the second reason is, I cannot find the content. Am I screaming? Sorry. Anyway, so a lot of times content related, especially in the B2B side, or the products selling cycles are much longer. Because the selling cycle is much longer, they have to keep, the salespeople need to keep the prospects engaged. And the one way, there are multiple ways to get them engaged, right? You wine and dine with them, that's one way. And you share something interesting with them. And that something interesting can be content, right? So it's like, hey, I found this white paper and talking about 5 trends of the quality management. And I thought of you today. So here you are, Stephen, I'm sending this to you. And how's your Friday? Right. Mm-hmm. When you send that email with that piece of content, all of a sudden it's a conversational opener. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and put your product or the salespeople on top of their mind again. That's why everybody is sending email, and the email marketing is not dead, because it does psychologically or at that moment, and will show your company or your product like on the top of someone's inbox. So align with sales and try to explain the benefit of that, and understand what kind of additional content they may need, and then try to correlate that with some of the content you want to create, or some of the content marketing initiative you want to do. And align with that and talking from sales angle can also be another option to get people to get your management buy into content marketing.
I love that. I love that you have a few different ways, just in case one doesn't work as well, you have some other options.
Yeah, and so, the last option is bribe your management. Send out cookies. I made some cookies, okay? Eat some and give me the budget. No, I'm
So we've talked about getting like buy-in, and you've provided really good tips there. So let's talk about like actually determining the ROI of what you're doing. So you've said that you can't figure out the value of content without the context of everything else related to that content, so like the way that you're distributing it and all that. So how do you go about determining whether content is successful or not?
You know, that's a great question. And there's always a debate, all right? The content marketing is not marketing, seriously. Because content itself, or a blog, originally when you write a draft of the blog, very likely is in the Google Doc or even in the Word Doc, right? Then you upload it to WordPress, and that's a blog on your website. But that content, that piece of content, it's just a content. Nobody is going to come to your content unless you promote it. Does that make sense? So yeah. There's another half of the content marketing. It's promotion. Mm-hmm. So if you just create content for the sake of content and expect people will come, trust me, nobody will come. Right? Unless you are, you know, you are Taylor Swift, or you are like the biggest celebrity name, or you are the biggest brand name. Even you are the biggest brand name nowadays, people don't usually come, right? So you have to promote it. And the promotion is like, okay, email marketing, okay? The promotion can be pay a Facebook ad. The promotion can be, you know, the paid, the media buy, right? So in order to get your content to be seen, it has to be a function of some sort of communication channel. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you want to measure ROI of the content itself, you can. How? If the content just sitting there on your website. So it has to be a function of the communication channel that you're going to push out, or a number of the downloads, right? But even come up with the number of downloads is still like some sort of promotion that you have done. You drove the inbound traffic to your site. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. The way I have come to realize, and not everybody agree with me, is the way that you have to measure ROI is really be a function of something, right? So there are two from my perspective. And the one is the downloads and the viewership. Granted, that's important. But the other one is how the content being repurposed and used as a part of the other outreach channel, right? The content being used as a part of email campaigns, right? The content has been used as a part of social media outreach. The content has been used by, you know, some other PR and AR team, So the usage of the content is also important. Unfortunately, there's no platform to track that. And a lot of time on the top, I always recommend my clients on the top performing content. In addition to like number of the downloads, the viewership, you also have to somehow gather information and identify how those contents being used in different channels. And that's a manual process. And there's no other way out as far as I can tell. Unless your marketing is fully integrated, fully in a backend.
Does this tie to the two different ways you say that you measure content, whether it's, you said from sources, so syndication channels, like you're saying, and then you said the other option is from destinations. So like where it ends up, like, can you talk a little bit about that approach?
Yeah. The source and the destination is just like I indicated, the source is how the source is being used. Mm-hmm. And the destination can mean different ways depending on how people define it, right? A lot of people say, oh, okay, well, I drive traffic back to our destination, which is a blog post. That you can track the destination. And some people basically said the destination is, I my outbound communication, right? So it really depends. But the way I want to define it, the destination is basically where the final destination of that blog post, right? So if it majority of times is actually on website. But what about that piece of content is a sponsored content that reside on the third party publication sites, which is a media buy. That's also a destination. If that's the case, you have to get the third party data, right? You have to go to the media buy publication companies that actually do that for you and they gather that information. So that's what I'm talking about, sources. And the one piece of content, especially one blog post, sometimes there's a lot of blog posts that being repurposed to a different channel. So you have to understand where that destination is. Again, data has been scattered, right? So you are not going to gather, say, the sponsored content that you place on Forbes.com or on NewYorkTimes.com. They have to provide that information back to you. And you have to manually to get that information. So,
which approach of determining this value is best to report to your leadership or your peers?
You know, that's a great question. And I'm hesitant. I sigh at this minute is, this is where I personally think the content marketers or even content marketing has failed. And, in a lot of ways. And by the way, and I'm not saying that this is anybody's fault. It's not. It's just the nature of the content itself and how digital marketing is done in the current stage. And remember I said content is just a content. And unless you syndicate it out, and which is a function of a different channels, or you do a media buy and you you source that specific content or select that content and on different publishing companies that they can actually promote it for you, then the collecting of very comprehensive data is hard because your content being used in multiple different channels and organic versus the media buy. So then when you gather information, there's always a sense of incomplete. That's a reality. I want to make sure everybody understands that everybody runs through that issue and the data you collect, it's always incomplete. Okay, it's not going to be 100% accurate. If your management always asking for accurate data, you are just going to, you have to set expectation or put the disclaimer that this is what you can gather as of today. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and then the second thing is that the incompletion of the data is one challenge. The second challenge that in terms of promoting and sharing with the management is they always want to know how does the content marketing impact sales? How does the content marketing impact conversion? And but if you are just saying that, okay, I have 50 million downloads, what does that mean? How does that impact the sales? How does that impact conversion? So unless your back end again, this is all the technology needs to connect it. Unless your backend is connected, for example, you have 50 million downloads and you have some sort of data, limited data, that you can do some segmentation, you can do some correlation with your CRM tools, with your marketing automation tools, then you can provide additional insight to your management. Out of this 50 million download, I can tell you, managers, right? And out of our target account, 490, the 50 million download, we actually can track about 5% of them is coming from those 490 accounts, for example, right? All of a sudden, you carry a very productive, insightful conversation with your management. But that requires you to do analysis. That requires the backend data is connected, which is these two prerequisites tend not to happen in many companies. That's why a lot of companies, they stop at number of the downloads. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So whenever I try to work with the clients, I always push them so hard. I say, you cannot tell me top 25 content, you have a total downloads of 1 million. That doesn't mean a thing to, you know, to your management. Is it possible that can we correlate some data and find out the people who download the information, if we have their email addresses, can we correlate that with our CRM, especially on some of the strategic accounts that the salespeople are tracking? So if you make that correlation and you can show that, that the content does have some sort of impact, even if it's pitiful, minimal, you show there's some sort of impact on the account side or on the sales side, it's going to, you will go more miles when you share the ROIs with your management. Is that helpful, Amanda?
I love that you kind of like
a long way of talking about it has to tie. The content has to move people down the funnels. That's the problem. And we tend to stay on top of the funnels most of the time. And that's not marketers' fault, because the nowadays the buyer's journey is so complicated. And unless you can track all the attributions, it's hard. I get it. It's hard. So,
yeah, you can definitely commiserate with the people in the situation, because that's why I think that's why so many people end up reporting on like vanity metrics, or they'll just say like something pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I have likes. I have impression. I have this. But you have to take it down to a next level. And the only way to take down to a next level is to get your hands dirty. You have to get your hands dirty. You have to be in the trenches. You have to analyze the data. You probably don't have to do it yourself. If you have little budget, you hire someone else to do it. You have to get your hands dirty. I have to say that one more time, right? If it's not your hand, okay, someone else's hand is fine. But you have to be in the trenches with that person.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask, and I think you've done a presentation on this as well. And I'm going to link to these resources in the show notes for people who want to dive into any of these more specifically. But you talk about like how to prepare for this type of a pitch meeting where you're trying to get buy-in for something content related. And I also want to ask, we're recording this in December 2020, so we're still in COVID times. How that changes online when you're doing this type of stuff, not even in a room with people, but on Zoom or something.
I know. So you have two questions. How does content change during, unusual circumstances? And then second thing is how to pitch. COVID changed everything. For the longest time, it was like, way back in April and May, I was like, oh, this will be over by June. Everything will go back to normal. And then, of course, like the whole year passed, we still shelter in place. And the things what I come to realize and is when I go to a different stores, and that just kind of analyze our own purchasing behavior. All right. And Amanda, I don't know about you. Like, for example, if I actually have to go to Apple Store, I cannot walk in. I have to set up appointment first.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if I decided to go to H&M, to do a holiday shopping, and they only allow certain amount of people in the store, and you cannot get in, they have somebody outside and you have to line up. And once your turn, you get in, right? So they actually take care, they count how many people outside because hashtag social distancing. And so with those kind of changes, the content needs to change to update on your website to share or communicate with your prospect or buyers that you are doing everything you can to keep them safe, right? There's tons of inconvenience, right? You cannot walk into a store anymore, you have to line up. So the signage needs to change. You have to somehow apologize to your customers, and also you have to explain the process. And all those are content, and all those are things that needs to be explained to your audience so they know what they do, right? They know what you will do to keep them safe. They know that you are trying to actually do everything you can to minimize the frustration. For longest time, any kind of those process changes, and for any major brands, you don't notice. They don't talk about it because those are just internal process. They make a change. They want to make sure salespeople inside the store are fully aware of it. They can implement it. They minimize that as much as possible. But now all those processes and all those communication, you have to communicate it out. Does that make sense? That has a huge impact on marketing. And marketing was not used to that. I was on the B2B side. You know, whenever we create a piece of content, look at how long it takes. You talk to subject matter expert, you write the draft like 3,000 times, you get legals approved, and a piece of content takes about like 6 weeks to get it done. I'm talking about long form. And now all of a sudden, everything is changing, like on a regular basis, every two or three days. And marketing is always the tail end of all communication, right? So if everything is changing downward spiral all the time internally, imagine that impact. The impact is a tsunami impact on the marketing. Oh my God, it's changing again. So I have to redo all my copy. Oh my God, this is changing again. Oh, I have to redo my copy. Does that make sense? Oh, I have to update my website. Oh my God, I cannot keep up. So at the end, all the changes that happened at the storefront, I'm not talking about e-commerce, that was done actually at store. It's no longer centralized. That's because marketing can't keep up. And there's nothing against marketing because our resources are finite and also limited. And there's so many changes, it's very hard for us to keep up, right? So the key things I learned out of this whole thing is you have to be very nimble. With change, you just basically say, okay, change again, let's do it. Right? There's not much to it. But you have to also tell your management, you know, all those changes cost money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that I think marketing failed to communicate it clearly. And that things that you have to tell them to own any kind of division, it's money that's associated with it. So moving forward, I just finished a newsletter for December. It's basically the best marketing plan for 2021 is to leave room for flexibility. There's not much to it. In the past, you can create a marketing plan, you have budget set, you can review every single quarter, you're fine, not anymore. So that's my biggest takeaway. And in terms of pitching to management, it depends on many factors, Amanda. When you do a pitch, you have to look at holistically, you know, what is, first of all, what is management's perception? Some managers are misers, nothing against them, love them dearly, but they don't want to spend money, right? And also you have to take that into account. Then the other one is maturity of your content management cycle. I mean, are you starting as a pilot or are you thinking about expand, right? And the third is alliance and also the perception and how people understand content marketing within your team and also sales team. So there's a lot of factors that take into account. So when you do the pitch, don't just think what you want to say. Everybody knows what they want to say. I want content marketing, but you have to think from the perspectives. What do you think management is going to think about and what do they care? And can you address that in your pitch? Are you aligned with sales? Are sales like very excited about this initiative you want to kick in? All right. And also internal team, did I create additional work for them? If it's additional work for them, trust me, you are not going to get a lot of buy-in. So how are you going to address that? So at the end of the day, when you pitch, it's all about addressing people's concerns. What are their concerns? How can I address them and tackle them one by one? So your pitch meeting is not talking about trends. It's not talking about how great content marketing is. You can, but at the end of the day, your pitch deck need to address the people sitting in the room, their concerns. That's how you should do it.
That's a great perspective to have. It makes total sense, and something that I think people forget about when they get caught up in the excitement of their plan.
I 100% agree. I have my share of that too.
Well, Pam, this has been wonderful. I like to wrap up interviews with just kind of a more light, fun question. And I'm doing a new one for 2021, which is, what advice do you have for content marketers on how to just be more creative in their work? Like, how do you get more creative or find inspiration?
Oh, for me specifically?
Yeah, yeah.
I do yoga. I'm a yogini. So whenever I do yoga, everybody was like, oh, when you are in yoga, be present. And I was never present when I do yoga. Whenever I do yoga, I was stretched. And I was like, Amanda asked me this question. How should I? And then I was like, leg stand, arm stand. Okay, Amanda say about this. Is that right? So whenever I was doing yoga, my mind was always somewhere else and thinking about client questions and thinking about the things, which is horrible. Doing yoga, be present, completely not working for me. But I use that time to actually kind of think through like the stuff I want to do or the speaking presentation I'm working on. Like a lot of time when you kind of stuck somewhere, and the way for me to actually kind of like think through and get another angle or think through with another sense of clarity is through doing yoga. So that's one way. And the other one, I have to tell you, just ask people. It's like, you post a question on Facebook community, hey, I ran into this issue, what do you think, blah, blah, blah. And for me is I usually have some people I can go to and I will ask specific questions. And I think that's where there's importance of mentoring and there's importance of a coaching for coaches. So I would say asking questions actually, another, I would say, easy way to get some sort of answer. But in terms of creativity, for me specifically, is I just need to be somewhere very quiet and by myself. And then just let my mind wander. We don't let our mind wander anymore because we are constantly looking at our old devices, right? From your phone to tablets to your laptop. And I really cherish the time that just like nothing. I don't turn the music on. I don't turn the TV on. I don't look at my phone. A lot of times just let your mind wander. And I think that's where I get most of my creativity.
I love that. So my final question, I promise, is knowing the objectives of this show, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
I would recommend Adith Elby. So if you are talking about content marketing and sales enablement, she is the gal.
Wonderful. I love getting recommendations from people and meeting new marketing folks. Pam, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and share your insights. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much for inviting me. And I hope your listeners will find that at least some of my advice useful. And if anybody have any specific feedback or concerns and about my answers or disagree with me, please let me know. I would love to hear from you.
How can they reach out to you?
Oh, I am on every single social media channel except TikTok. I found my signature dance down. Damn it. So you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, social media, Twitter at Pam Bittner, or just quickly go to my website and send me an email. That works too.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Pam.
Thanks a lot.
If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, songs I should listen to, thoughts on whether I should get a second cat, ice cream maker recommendations, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for the logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.